You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for July 17th, 2015. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from Dinesh D'Souza's work release program, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Dinesh D'Souza must continue for another 4 years the community service portion of his sentence for campaign finance violations.
Wop, wop, wop.
Yeah.
The judge also ordered psychological counseling must continue because he assessed that D'Souza continued to demonstrate arrogance regarding his case.
Yeah, just like Jesus. Come down off the cross, Dinesh. We can use the wood, my friend.
Yeah. And Michael Grimm is also going to jail now.
It's like the martyrdom of early Christians.
The persecution of Christians continues.
Yeah. Thanks, Obama. You know, that's why he rented a federal prison, to clear out space for all of his, you know, persecution victims.
See?
He's pardoning people right and left so he can make enough room for his political enemies.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you laugh now, but wait a month until you see it in your email from Crazy Uncle Liberty. Citing WorldNet Daily and liberal sources close to the president, which will be our podcast.
Jade Helm, 2015. Okay. We have a programming note.
Yeah, sorta.
We recorded yesterday. This is Friday afternoon that we are recording again. Mm-hmm. Our neighbor decided to power wash his driveway yesterday, and I didn't realize how badly the microphone was picking that up. We did try lots of ways to fix the audio. It didn't really get fixed. We were able to get most of Science Fiction University put together as best I could.
Yeah, by we mean you, Blue Gal.
Me.
Yeah.
And so it is now 1:17 in the afternoon on Friday. Usually I have the podcast up by 2.
Yeah.
And I just told Driftglass about 5 minutes ago, look, we're just going to podcast.
We're gonna go with it. We're doing it live, baby.
We're really doing it live. This is us recording this and really not editing it that much. Mm-hmm. So if there are coughs or burps or, you know, us saying you know too much, it's because I had to paste this in and get it out. So my apologies ahead of time if this is a rough podcast, but we wanted to get a show out to you this week.
It didn't sound like it was coming from an airplane hangar with jets running,
or that it was a David Lynch movie.
Yeah. So. just cut together any old which way. I'll also point out that Blue Gal is powering through her post birthday hangover.
Whatever. I didn't get any cake yesterday.
I know.
We were so full from dinner. We came home and he had got me this very nice cake. And
it was a delicious.
It's came still back in the refrigerator. So
We also wanted to see a Lawrence O'Donnell, which we will get to in a few minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to start the show with Bible Bitch.
Yeah.
Bible Bitch.
That's not scriptural. And I'm going to read from Galatians. And this is the reason I picked this end of Galatians has to do with the attack on Planned Parenthood this week.
Mm-hmm.
The James O'Keefe School of Journalism strikes again.
Yep.
Heavily edited video claiming that, as they do claim every 2 years or so, that Planned Parenthood is actually selling baby parts. To whom? I mean, This story is just so odd anyway, that there would be a market for baby parts out there. But, you know, Nancy Reagan is in favor of stem cell research to end Parkinson's.
Using fetal tissue.
Using fetal tissue.
Where do you think fetal tissue comes from? Yeah, exactly.
And the transfer and transportation of fetal tissue from a clinic to a research facility is heavily regulated, and the reimbursement for the costs of transporting that tissue, which has to be done under sanitary and frozen and so forth conditions. I mean,
medically supervised, yeah.
Yeah. But there are companies that do that, and Mitt Romney is one of the investors in one of these companies that transfers fetal tissue. So,
ruh-roh.
Well, people that have a sense of reality about what science and medical research is about get this. And what is happening, though, is that we have people like James O'Keefe out there who aren't interested in medical research or the nuances of how things are done. They want to score points.
And they want to do it by appealing to the most ancient outrage. I mean, this goes back to the blood libel. This goes back to using Christian baby blood to make your matzos. You know, this is old school medieval shit that they're invoking. Mm-hmm. They're trying to bring out, you know, liberals want to kill children and make money off of it. And they really feel no compunction about doing this shit because they feel that they are righteous.
I hadn't thought about that. I hadn't thought about how really primal.
It's as low as it gets. And they do it cheerfully. Mm-hmm. They make money off of doing it. And they feel no compunction about it because we're the bad guys, Blue Gal. We're the evil ones.
And so their lies are not at all part of the equation, in terms of whether they're going to make it to heaven or hell because they're good and we're evil. So.
They're justified in doing so because we're so bad.
Yep.
Yep.
And so Paul had this problem as well with the Galatians.
Paul down the block? No.
Oh, no. The Apostle Paul wrote to the Galatians, and they were having fights over circumcision. And people were coming to the Galatians and saying, well, if you're not going to do this, then you're not really Christian. And so this is what Paul wrote. Don't be misled. No one makes a fool of God. What a person plants, he will harvest. The person who plants selfishness, ignoring the needs of others, ignoring God, harvests a crop of weeds. All he'll have to show for his life is weeds. Now, in these last sentences, I want to emphasize in the bold scrawls of my personal handwriting the immense importance of what I have written to you. These people who are attempting to force the ways of circumcision on you have only one motive. They want an easy way to look good before others, lacking the courage to live by a faith that shares Christ's suffering and death. All their talk about the law is gas. They themselves don't keep the law, and they are highly selective in the laws they do observe. They only want you to be circumcised so they can boast of their success in recruiting you to their side. That is contemptible. Quite frankly, I don't want to be bothered anymore by these disputes. I have far more important things to do, the serious living of this faith. We don't always agree with everything Paul says.
No.
Certainly when he talks to the church in firm language about focusing on what's really important. And criticizes those who distract everyone from that. He's right on the money.
Yeah.
And I just want to say, too, that the thing about the anti-choice movement in the past couple of years is that it has completely radicalized me, and I know a lot of other people, in terms of not being, not prevaricating anymore about abortion rights and being pro-abortion. And it just, the lies that are told in the name of life and we're pro-life, you know, movement and so forth is bullshit.
It is.
They're anti-poor women and anti-sex.
Yes.
And that's what it is.
Period.
And period. Mm-hmm. And I'm sick of it. And I think a lot of people are becoming just radicalized by this. You know, there was for a long time a sense of, well, we want abortion to be rare and we want abortion to be, and of course we do.
Yeah.
But when you push it to the point of, villainizing women, and then once they've had their children, abandoning them, and it's never about the congressman. It's always about his mistress being a slut.
Right? God damn it!
Actually, congressional mistresses can have all the abortions they want.
Sure. Why do these women keep sucking my dick?
So, I think we need to get radical about this and just be pro-abortion.
Yeah, well.
And pro whatever a woman wants to do with her body, who's an adult woman, to take responsibility. And the abortion rate is going down dramatically due to access to contraception, which we all knew.
Exactly. Exactly.
Was what needed to happen. So.
And so let's shut those clinics down. Let's shut them down. That's the part where you have to, the irony here, in a weird way, is that the logic of the NRA is actually true for anti-choice people.
Mm-hmm.
If you let them take one thing away, they'll go after everything else.
Yeah.
They will never. It really is a slippery. They are coming for your rights. They're like the paranoid, you know, gun grabber talk is actually true for anti-choice people.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to stop until abortion is illegal always and forever from coast to coast.
Yep.
And they made it abundantly clear. And you can, again, this is an echo back to the 90s. The Clinton position, both Hillary and Bill, let's make abortion safe, legal, and rare, right? And, well, how do you do that? You do that with comprehensive, clear sex education.
Mm-hmm.
Abstinence only doesn't fucking work. And you make birth control as easy to get to as Tic Tacs.
Well, and that is now happening in California and Oregon. They are working to allow pharmacists to simply give birth control pills to women without a prescription.
For free.
It's free under Obamacare.
Exactly.
Insured women get it anyway.
Yeah.
But the idea is, look, the birth control pill has been proven safe and effective. If you can get a flu shot, which has side effects, you know, in a pharmacy without a prescription, you should be able to get birth control without a prescription.
Yeah. So if you are.
And they're also working ways around. I'm sorry.
Please.
I don't mean to interrupt you. But, you know, the Republican Party is now saying, well, let's make birth control over the counter, which then makes it not free anymore.
Exactly.
Again, we're going after poor women. We are punishing poor women over and over and over again. And so there's now a bill in Congress to say that the Affordable Care Act insurers must cover all contraception over the counter or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so that just takes care of it. I don't know what will pass and what will not pass, but I do know that there are a number of women in Congress who are serious about this and aren't going to take any bullshit. And I applaud them. So,
and this is another thing you can sort of take as a marker that you these people are beyond reach and redemption in a certain way. If you are troubled by abortions generally, and you are against comprehensive sex education and comprehensive contraception, then you have no business participating in a conversation.
Yeah, enjoy your time in the convent. Because
just go away. You have no business being a citizen, participating as a citizen in this country, because your opinions are bullshit. Your opinions are nonsense. Your opinions are shit. And go away. The problem is, of course, they won't go away. But the least we can do is stop treating their opinion as if it deserves any respect at all.
Mm-hmm.
Their opinion is contemptible and should be called out as such on every occasion when you can find it. If you find someone who is troubled by abortion and thinks, you know what, I really am really pro-life, that's why I think contraception and education should be ubiquitous, great. We can work together. That's no problem. Mm-hmm. Absolutely fine. Mm-hmm. But if you hold both of those positions, go away. You flunked citizenship, and nobody should listen to you or heed your opinion.
Or you could be like Bill Maher.
Mm-hmm.
He says, yeah, I think it's killing something. I don't care.
Yeah.
There you go. Let's talk about Lawrence O'Donnell.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that took a day. The arc of that story.
This is the advantage of taping on Friday.
we can not say all the stuff we said yesterday.
Yeah.
Okay. Not quite. Yesterday. The arc of the story runs from like 7 in the morning until 9 at night or 10 at night, our time anyway. It starts off on the deeply despicable Morning Joe show where – don't watch that show. Let me watch that show for you. Come to my blog. Go read about it elsewhere. But please don't watch Morning Joe anymore if you are at all. It is a horrible show. It is a beachhead in what is left of liberal TV for Roger Ailes. It is a straight-up Fox News clone. Run by a straight-up Bill O'Reilly light guy named Joe Scarborough.
And we are not here to explain that to you.
No.
So.
No. So
moving on.
Here's the thing. So they're gathered around to praise Donald Trump. They're running through all the Republican candidates and talking about how awesome they all are. And
explain
having them all.
Who's on the panel at Morning Joe.
This particular morning, it was Joe, his mousy abused TV wife, Mika Brzezinski, Mike Barnacle, who is a barnacle, who hasn't had a single original thought, according to Charlie Pierce, since Mike Royko died, which I kind of believe. Mark Halperin, who is just awful in every possible respect, a complete and utter Washington hack. And Bill Kristol, who is an ABC employee and a blood-drunk sociopath and a war criminal and a thug and a monster. And why he is on any television anywhere, but he's on my liberal TV.
And so Lawrence O'Donnell was a guest to this panel. Is that what happened?
Exactly. He was invited on to talk about Donald Trump. And the story isn't about Donald Trump. The story is about the fact that Donald Trump is a liar and a clown. And Lawrence O'Donnell brought this fact out by pointing out that in 2011, NBC, back when Donald Trump was claiming, you know, vast sums of wealth that he wouldn't talk about, and huge salary, biggest salary ever, that NBC had to issue, was forced through clenched teeth to issue a press release saying, actually, no, he's lying. We really don't like talking about salaries. We never do it. But his statements about how much we paid him are so grossly out of proportion with anything. They don't resemble reality at all. So it is their way of saying, yeah, he's lying. And Lawrence O'Donnell said he's not going to run for president. He can't afford to. He can't afford to tell people how much he's worth. He can't afford to quit his day job. That's how hard up for cash he is back in 2011. I have no idea if that is changed or not. But Lawrence O'Donnell was on there to talk about Donald Trump's history of lying about his wealth and his influence and his et cetera, and how much of a pass he gets from people on that. This did not set well. Having Donald Trump's dick slapped out of his mouth did not set well with Joe Scarborough, who proceeded to get everyone else on the panel sort of in his corner. And they just over-talked Lawrence O'Donnell. They talked about how jealous he must be. And Bill Kristol's in there smirking like Bill Kristol actually always does. He has no other facial expression of indignation because he can never be fired. Bill Kristol's smirking about it. They're talking about how much more he makes than Hillary or less than Hillary, because let's change the subject to Hillary. But it was obviously something that made them extremely uncomfortable. Because when you bring up these things in their house, they freak out because they have a narrative. They have a story. The story cannot include the fact that the Republican Party generally is a bunch of liars and clowns and frauds and destructive people, awful people. That's a narrative that the Beltway cannot support. And so it must be cast out if anyone brings it up. So Lawrence O'Donnell brings it up. They overtalk him and wait till he leaves. And then the next segment, Joe Scarborough piles on even more, talking about how he was ranting and yelling and calling everybody a liar and called NBC a liar and just generally got everything wrong. Because remember, in addition to everything else, Joe Scarborough is very, very stupid. And as my blog has documented and dozens of others, he's a big, loud, dumb bully who tells everyone around him to shut up when they step out of line, including his beset, mousy TV wife, Mika Brzezinski. So that's the story, right? There's a pie fight on the Morning Joe show, and it turns out the facts are on Lawrence O'Donnell's side, and it carries over into Twitter.
Well, that was the point, was Lawrence actually tweeted and said, you know, it might be nice if you're going to rewrite what I say on the show that you let me be on the set while you do it so I can correct you instead of waiting till I leave.
Right.
And
the thing was, it's like, okay, well, I wonder what his show is going to be like in the evening. Because this sort of bubbled all over the TV for a while.
And we rushed home for my birthday dinner just to see
we didn't rush home. But, you know, because I like to take my time taking my wife out to dinner.
Oh, we had a good time.
She's
we had a really good time.
Date.
But we talked about how we were going to get home in time to see Lawrence. Yeah. Yes, okay. We did.
And the news was dominated by the mass shooting, which as well it should be. That was a big and terrible story. So Lawrence O'Donnell reserved the last 2 minutes of his show to say, and I'm paraphrasing, I like Donald Trump. I have nothing against Donald Trump. When I was in an accident and I came out of the hospital, the first email I got was from Donald Trump. He was greeted me decently and kindly at this event, and they showed that clip, you know, four or five times. And I never wanted to be a part of the story because how much Donald Trump makes is the least relevant part of any story. We shouldn't even be worried about it. So I regret sort of becoming part of the story because it deprived the panel of hearing a much more important story, which is true. And I like Donald Trump, and I just want to cover him as a journalist. I don't ever want to be part of his story. And that was it. Never mentioned the fact that Joe Scarborough is a lying ass clown buffoon. Never mentioned the fact that this panel of people had sort of risen up in mass to defend a guy who's still a clown and a liar, Donald Trump. Never mentioned any of it because this was a fight in the employee cafeteria at MSNBC.
Yeah.
And Lawrence Arnold might have had a change of heart at some point.
Well, and I do trust Lawrence to have come to Jesus moment in terms of his career because he's been through this before when he kind of lost his temper about the Mormon church time.
Yes, he did. He was on the John McLaughlin show.
Yeah.
And he disappeared.
Yeah.
For a good long time.
So, you know, it's not necessarily that someone from upstairs came down to his office and said, clean up your act.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever happened, he did have a change of heart. And he said, I like Donald Trump. Donald right. Trump, here's a video of Donald Trump being a bigger man than I was
right.
at the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Yep.
He came over and shook my hand. I wouldn't have done that.
Mm-hmm.
Lawrence didn't say, I like Joe Scarborough.
Nope. Joe Scarborough didn't enter into it.
No.
At all.
That to me is telling.
Yeah.
But we'll keep watching and see how it goes.
Yeah.
The story really is Donald Trump is a liar. And Donald Trump, as you have said to me this week, and I thought it was very revealing, mm-hmm. And I hadn't really thought of it this way. Donald Trump's job now is to make Scott Walker look sane and stable.
Exactly. Until someone buys him off.
Yep.
Someone writes him a big enough check to go away.
And so that may, you know, Donald Trump may be the monster that consumes the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
Or he may be a stepping stone for whatever crazy anti-union, you know, anti-minimum wage asshole winds up being the nominee.
Yeah.
I don't want to take my eye off of what the Republican platform really is and what the issues really are.
Exactly.
Because Trump is the Republican Party's problem.
Well, Trump is the Republican Party, period. He really is their soul. That's what it looks like. And looking at it directly is grotesque and terrifying.
Well, and it's like we were talking about last week when we talked about, you know, you've invited the Klan into your parlor.
Yeah, Rod Serling. In the 60s.
All of the crazy people who you tried to stuff in the basement are now out on the front porch of your house.
And how do you cope with that? You know, you pretend that. Well, and here, thank you for reminding me. There was one more important element to this story, which was during the morning, now that the waters have been roiled and everyone's kind of Mika wants to know why we're all laughing about Donald Trump. Donald Trump, is it crazy? But she said, but, you know, Ted Cruz says crazy things. Lindsey Graham says crazy things. And
Bernie Sanders says crazy things.
She didn't say that. No, that's my point. My point is that Joe Scarborough interrupted her. This is the opinion. Look, everyone note that Mika, who her opinion from the south of France, because you got to throw France in because everyone hates is that the only people who say crazy things are Republicans. But let me point out, Bernie Sanders says crazy things.
Wow.
And Elizabeth Warren says crazy things. In fact, everybody says crazy things. And now you all may continue because he laid down this artillery barrage of both siderism.
Man.
It's not Donald Trump. It's everybody. Everybody says, even we on the show occasionally say silly, crazy things. It doesn't mean, and it doesn't mean anything.
Jade Helm 2015.
And of course, being his abused spouse for hire.
Yep.
She rolled over because
she knows where her shoes are paid for. So that's she's going to do what she has to do.
Exactly. No, that was the thing that jumped out at me right after that was, wow. So what's going to come next? Well, you got to roll out the both siders thing. You got to do the only thing that saves this is the both sides thing. And just like clockwork, out it came.
Let's talk for a minute about Ta-Nehisi Coates and David Brooks, because you were handed a big present. It's not your birthday this week.
No.
But you got a big box with a bow on it this morning in the form of David Brooks writing a public letter to Ta-Nehisi Coates.
I thought David Brooks trying to make Hillary Clinton into a neo-paleo-liberal was the height of my week. The height of my David Brooks week was David Brooks once again, you know, rewriting history. Once again, just taking what actually happened over the last 20 or 30 or 50 years and just expunging it. Mm-hmm. It was hilarious. And, you know, I forget probably the Salon or some other magazine that we love, Wonkette. The neutral observer, David Brooks, notices that Hillary Clinton is a Soviet thug or something like that. You know, if she loves big government programs, oh, she's a crazy liberal. She's not as crazy as Bernie Sanders, of course, but she's a crazy leftist liberal. So this was the week that David Brooks put aside any pretense of being America's rabbi-in-chief or moralizer-in-chief or humility guy-in-chief or chief morality humility officer. And that's what happened on Monday. I thought, oh, this is a pretty interesting week in David Brooks' land. And then this morning, David Brooks wrote a column, White-splaining Race Relations to Ta-Nehisi Coates. And it was quite amazing. Even as we speak, the world is on fire from this. He is taking fire from every quarter. And it is sad and funny and ridiculous. I am, you know, I am America's leading scholar of David Brooks, Brooksologist. And I felt it was my responsibility today to just sort of step aside, because I would like to see other people expend millions of angry, bewildered words trying to bring David Brooks to heel and finding out that he is an absolute impregnable fortress of Beltway authority. David Brooks does not listen to his critics. David Brooks does not respond to things that people say. David Brooks does not apologize or redact anything. David Brooks, and he does this because David Brooks has built a completely alternate universe where the past 50 years of conservatism never happened. After the Bush years imploded, after his Bush dream palaces fell apart, David Brooks went about the task of constructing an alternate fake history of conservatism and fake history of politics in which Jerry Falwell never existed, Phyllis Schlafly never existed, the right wing never adopted the Southern strategy. None of that ever happened as far as David Brooks is concerned. And he and the rest of the Beltway scum have been living in this thing that he and they built for about 10 years now, about 9, 10. Mm-hmm. And they're very comfortable in there. It's a very profitable place to be. It depends completely on lying constantly about the past and the present and politics. It depends on making sure that for every Ted Cruz, there's a Bernie Sanders. And for every Donald Trump, there's an Elizabeth Warren. Because, you know, both sides are crazy. And mm-hmm. it's an imaginary center where we all live. Again, it depends entirely on fiction, on making shit up. And today, David Brooks thought he would explain to Ta-Nehisi Coates why he was wrong about race. And the funniest fucking sentence in this whole thing is where he's scolding this young man. He said, I think you distort American history, says David Brooks.
Hasn't that sort of been exactly your analysis of David Brooks for, 10 years
in writing.
In writing, yes.
World. And the thing is, he goes after his tone. That's what's so lovely about it. The fact that it's his anger that's the problem. It's his bitterness that's the problem. Because in David Brooks's world, manners are everything.
Mm-hmm.
And being humble and polite and kind. Remember how all of us scummy liberal bloggers and Ann Coulter have to sit at the kiddies table. And the adults need to sit at the adult table. There's the serious people and the unserious people. And the unserious people are people who bring up uncomfortable topics that make David Brooks feel icky, like race, or people who say fuck a lot, like bloggers. And so those people can all be shoved safely aside. And during our initial pass at this story, you made a very astute observation about the difference where Mr. Coates is going to be in 20 years,
mm-hmm.
where David mm-hmm. Brooks is going to be in 20 years. I'd like mm-hmm. you to talk about that.
Well, it just was fascinating to me watching Amazon this week, because we have the Amazon link up at our website.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been on Amazon a lot this week, and every time I've gone on, there's been Ta-Nehisi Coates' book being number one in some category.
Yeah.
And it's in five or six or seven categories that his book is either number one or it's number two only under To Set a Watchman, right?
Go Set a Watchman, right. Which, if you don't know what that is, it's the most anticipated book in 50 years.
Yeah, yeah. It's Harper Lee's follow-up, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
It's highly ironic because, yes, that book has been anticipated, first of all, for 50 years,
yep.
but also concretely anticipated since before Christmas.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh,
there
yeah.
have been pre-sales, and we're going to publish a chapter, and here's a snippet, and here's an analysis, and, you know, just really a lot of excitement in the publishing world
mm-hmm.
that this was going to sell a lot. It's something everyone's wanted to read, more of her writing, and it turns out that there's a lot of racism.
Yeah.
But white racism in this book. So it's,
if you don't read air quotes books so much,
yeah.
this is the literary equivalent of The Force Awakens. This is the story that people have been waiting around for a long time. And it's gotten exactly the kind of entree, exactly the kind of welcome and red carpet treatment that you expect from a book that the second book she's written.
Mm-hmm.
Ta-Nehisi Coates did not get that kind of treatment. He's gotten great treatment since then, but he is going toe-to-toe with that kind of publicity and anticipation.
And winning. And winning because the reviews of this book are, this is the kind of book that will be taught in college courses on race relations 100 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
This book, and I haven't read it yet. We did order it, but I haven't read it yet. But the reviews are, mm-hmm. you know, this book sets the tone for what it is like to be black in America in 2015
mm-hmm.
and all of the zeitgeist that goes around that. The reviews have just been incredible. And it's a must read for everyone. And it's a must read for all of David Brooks's friends.
Yes,
too.
Exactly. And you pointed out
in
something.
A way that his books never will be.
No. And in a year, you will be able to find The Road to Character in the finer thrift shops and cast off
remainder
right, piles. A-books
all
will
over. Have a sale. Yeah.
Ironically, or not ironically, David Brooks holds one degree. He graduated college, University of Chicago, with a bachelor's degree in, wait for it, history.
Mm-hmm.
That's what
mm-hmm.
he has been formally trained and educated to do and write sentences. And he's a competent constructor of sentences. But David Brooks has spent certainly the last 10 years, but I would argue the back half of his career, last 20, 25 years, attempting to radically rewrite American history, as I've already indicated.
From the perspective
yes.
of sitting on a high mountain away from everyone,
yes.
away from any criticism of his own life or his own participation
mm-hmm.
in American society and where his role as white male privilege, as a holder of white male mm-hmm. privilege, exists.
And when
I say privilege, I mean the top of privilege.
The absolute peak of
privilege
American,
among privileged like, people.
Yeah.
Right.
And
so,
please.
Pardon me. the point to me is that Ta-Nehisi Coates speaks his truth very personally.
Exactly.
He's writing a letter to his son
mm-hmm.
about his emotional reactions to everything,
mm-hmm.
what his life is like as a black man. And it's all of his writing, I feel, and I've read a lot of his writing in The Atlantic,
mm-hmm.
Is deeply personal.
And comes with tremendous scholarship attached to
yeah,
it, too.
Yeah.
I mean, really, his
mm-hmm.
his just recently, his article on the history of the Confederate flag and secession was outstanding and irrefutable, unrebuttable. And David Brooks writes about America as it never existed
mm-hmm.
from this weird, robotic, passionless, third-person, omniscient, alien flying by the planet view. And he gets things horribly wrong a lot of the time. And people
yeah.
point out, and his conclusions are based on idiotic assumptions that people keep pointing out to him futilely that he is making. And every single goddamn time, the village, the Beltway circles around him because he's been asked, you know, he writes about disordered families and how those people over there are immoral or amoral or have fallen off the path. And one of his colleagues finally had the balls to ask him, aren't you divorced? You know, let's put you in this story. Where is your personal truth? Where are you in the thing you are describing? And David Brooks says, I'm not going to talk about that. Yeah. I'm not going to talk about it. Well, and the woman who challenged him about his slanderous attacks on people like you and me during the Iraq War. And
I don't think I ever wrote that.
And yeah. I don't think I ever wrote. David is absolutely in complete, almost pathological denial about his own life, his own history, his own words, and the history of his own political movement, his own social movement, his own social class. He is deeply schizophrenic and deeply detached from real life and real people. And it shows up in his writing, which is passionless and trite and awful.
Speaking of hypocrisy. I want to talk about the Iran deal and the right wing's reaction to. I've said on Twitter, I'm waiting for Donald Trump to propose a nukes for hostages deal.
Yeah,
because that would be very Reagan-esque.
Like Reagan would have done. You know, imaginary Reagan is our greatest president.
Wait, I thought we just spent 2 years negotiating not giving them nukes or not them having nukes. No, but we'll sell them weapons to make Dick Cheney rich, right?
Well, yeah. Yeah,
and interestingly enough, Ron Paul has come out in favor of the Iran deal.
Wow.
Ron Paul.
Ron Paul.
Yeah.
Still around.
Still around.
He's still here.
But you wanted to talk a little bit about, and I thought I wasn't going to have to talk about Glenn Greenwald for my birthday week.
Yeah.
But you did want to talk a little bit about that corner of the internet.
Yeah.
And their response, just because it was it's an interesting writerly way they approached it.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I as readers and listeners have noticed, I don't talk about Glenn Greenwald very much. It doesn't interest me. There's a lot of other things that interest me more, and I focus on those things. I haven't sworn off of it in any way, but yeah. And interestingly, a certain segment of commenters have gone away. They're not interested in anything else I have to write about or anything else I have to say. But when Glenn's name is invoked, they come out of the woodwork, whether it's been a day or a week or a month or a year, and chide me for my obsession with Glenn Greenwald. So this isn't about anything Glenn wrote. It's about what he didn't write. Long ago, you might remember, this is, you know, in internet time, this is at least a millennia ago, but it was probably a year ago. The prevailing wisdom from Glenn Greenwald and David Sirota and what I used to call the Purity Corner or the Purity Angels was that Barack Obama was a bloodthirsty, warmongering tool of the military-industrial complex. Barack Obama liked bombing people, liked killing people. He was invade first and ask questions never. He was worse than George Bush in so many ways that were clearly demonstrable. And given half a chance, he was going to invade any goddamn country he possibly could. He was definitely going to invade Syria. That was just a given, because he is a jackbooted thug who just likes invading countries. That was the narrative about President Barack Obama not very long ago from these people. Now that Barack Obama has negotiated, or John Kerry has negotiated on behalf of the Obama administration, a peace treaty with the largest enemy we have in the Middle East, the biggest opponent we have there, the one country for which Dick Cheney sports a bigger hard-on than Iraq,
mm-hmm.
the one country that the military-industrial complex, which controls Barack Obama, and the neocons who secretly control Barack Obama, want to invade more than any other fucking country on the planet, the one country that Bibi Netanyahu would give his right nut to invade, is the one country that Barack Obama has negotiated a nuclear non-proliferation and inspection regime with the help of that evil John Kerry. So this is a good thing, right? It lowers the tension in the Middle East. It lowers the temperature. The one thing it also does is fly directly in the face of the narrative that Barack Obama wants to invade anybody, anywhere, anytime, will use any pretext to do it. And that is the story I haven't read anywhere at The Intercept.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't read a single.
They're not talking about John Kerry at all.
No, they're not talking about this at all. There is one article there. There's a bunch of articles about surveillance, which are great. An article about an assassination of a Syrian official by Israeli troops or Israeli Green Beret or secret police or whatever. But I'm sorry, my words are failing me, and my wife will not be able to edit this out. So, ha, 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 ha. But these are fine articles. They're great. Go over and read them. That's wonderful. But there's one article on Iran, and it's how Iranians view the deal. And it's written by Glenn Greenwald and another journalist, and it's fine. There's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with it. It's, you know, American journalism is the captive of AIPAC. All you're ever going to hear from in American journalism and in Washington, D.C., are from neocons and from AIPAC and warmongers, which is certainly true. There's a lot of truth in that. But what you never see in the article is the name Barack Obama or John Kerry. What you never see anywhere in The Intercept is a mention that this peace treaty was negotiated in good faith by the United States, its partners, and it does a single important thing. It takes the temperature down in the region, and it makes the world a safer place.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a narrative that the purity angels are not yet ready to embrace, in exactly the same way that David Brooks is not yet ready to embrace the actual history of the Republican Party and conservatism in America. So in David Brooks's case, he just makes up a fake history. And in Glenn's case, we just don't hear about it. There's just no story there. There's nothing worth talking about. There's a long article about raising money for Chelsea Manning's legal defense, which is great. That's terrific.
Yep.
But you think the most important single story right now on the globe would find a place somewhere in this brand new media machine that Glenn has created, which is supposed to be focusing on exactly this kind of story. Anyway, that's my take on it.
Each week, we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is Tashi, who will allow you to kiss her paw.
Maybe.
You can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And if you buy your espresso from Amazon, we have a link at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, which will send a portion of your purchase to us.
May I make a brief commercial here for just a moment?
Sure.
We are great fans of supporting locally based businesses, local restaurants. That's where we had our wonderful dinner last night. That's where you'll find us most days of the week, at some kind of local establishment. However, if you're going to make an Amazon purchase,
If you can use our link.
If you can, it don't cost nothing.
That's right.
And a little bit of it comes to us. So we appreciate that if that's your second choice.
But if you go to a local coffee grinder and want to mail us 6% or 4% or whatever it is we're getting these days of your purchase, that's fine, too.
Wouldn't kick that out of the bank account, eh, Blue Gal?
No, we wouldn't. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can, too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal, postal address, and Amazon link are there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and thank you. So, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties are making $90 an hour harvesting fetus tissue from home. Ask us how!
Let's think about living.
Think about loving.
Let's think about loving.
Think about loving.
Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under Creative Commons license, copyright 2015, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
And happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. What am I doing on my birthday? I'm recording a podcast.
Recording a flipping podcast.
In addition to getting taken out to a dinner at our nice local restaurant. Thank you for all the nice birthday wishes, everybody. Very, very kind of you. I want to thank those of you who sent gifts, and I'm kind of overwhelmed by people sending. One person, Woof, W-O-O-F, Woof, sent an Amazon gift card to me. Thank you very much. There's no way for me to thank that person via email, so I'll thank them on
the air. You're doing it now. You're doing it live.
And thank you very much, everybody. And as we said last week, I'm 52, so now I'm finally a full deck.
More or less.
Not operating with a full deck. Just All right. Well, Science Fiction University is fun this week. It comes to us from Magnolia ePublishing, our friends there. And Magnolia ePublishing says, while listening to the always excellent Dog-Faced Herman submissions, I realized we have never paid our respects to one of the most stock characters in science fiction that doesn't have three breasts.
Yes.
And that is the President of the United States. Yeah, yeah. There always is some sort of President of the United States or President of the Federation or...
Except for President Three Breasts.
Who?
President Three Breasts. You know.
Oh, well, I don't know about that one.
Yeah. I haven't written that yet, but I'm on it.
If you told me there was a President Three Breasts on Futurama, I would believe you.
All I can say is I'm working on an outline for next year's True Detective.
It's going to have a President Three Breasts in True Detective.
Just on television in the background. You're barely noticeable. All right, so let's rock this thing.
We're going to rock this thing. President of the United States. And here are 9 references in movies to the President of the United States. Let's get started. Number 1.
We're fighting for our right to live, to exist. And should we win the day, the 4th of July will no longer be known as an American holiday, but as the day when the world declared in one voice, we will not go quietly into the night. We will not vanish without a fight. We're going to live on. We're going to survive. Today, we celebrate our
Independence Day.
Yeah, this is an easy one. Yeah.
Bill Pullman or Paxton or...
Pullman.
They're interchangeable. But yeah, it was a big, loud, you know, kind of mediocre movie that was a very bad... It had giant plot holes you could drive through. But that wasn't the point. The point was it was blowing shit up real good.
Blowing up the Congressional Dome. Yeah.
Yeah.
On the 4th of July weekend release. Yeah, that's the point.
You know the movie they never made to follow that up?
What?
Labor Day.
Boom.
We got to clean this shit up. You know? Because first of all, you got to clean this shit up. The planet's in terrible condition. Secondly, you now have a whole bunch of alien technology that you can harvest. That would make a very interesting movie.
The rebuilding. Yeah. That'd be kind of boring, though.
What happens when a mothership crashes in the Soviet Union or Russia? Now you have vast, new, incredibly powerful weapons and technology scattered all over the globe among various people, some of whom might use it for bad things.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be a much better movie than Independence Day. But
well, sure. You should write a story about that.
With President Three Breasts, who...
All right.
Yeah, okay.
Number 2.
Oh, come on, there must be some...
Yes, Mr. President.
Get me Palmer Station.
I've been snowed in all this time. You and the research crew could be flown down. You'd be safe there.
We'll make it. God willing. You were my opponent in every political battle, but you were never my enemy.
I have no idea. And I really, I think I should. I just have, it sounds familiar. The voices sound familiar. I just have no idea.
Well, the person talking to the president who is doing the coughing and actually dies during the scene is Robert Vaughn.
Okay. All right.
The president is Glenn Ford.
Oh, man. Really? Okay.
A really old Glenn Ford.
Yeah.
And this is called Day of Resurrection, also released under the title Virus from 1980.
Neither of which I saw, unless I was in a drive-in and very much distracted. But I can't swear to that either way.
All right. Let's try number 3.
Revolutionary example that delighted President Parrish. Human dungeon of his own imperialist prison. The bosses are the racist.
Unlock the pod. She's bolted the door.
Can't you shoot off the lock?
No, sir. She's pressurized the cabin.
How about lifting the door off of the hinges?
No, sir.
Get me to the pod.
I know the voice. That's absolutely Donald Pleasance.
That is Donald Pleasance. You're right.
And I really can't place it. Damn it. Give me a clue.
It's got a prison in it.
Oh, okay. Is it got Kurt Russell in it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Never mind. I didn't get this one without clues and significant hand gestures from my significant other. So I'm not going to count this against my final grade. But this is The Awesome Escape from New York.
That's right. That's right.
Everyone should know about because it's a great movie. And if you haven't seen it, go see it right now, goddammit. Anyway, that's Donald Pleasance, and it's New York is a prison, and it involves escaping from it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, I think this president's voice you will recognize. Number four.
You know those interlaced frames that we thought were noise? This says structure. I'm hearing structure.
If this discovery is confirmed, it will surely be one of the most stunning insights into our universe that science has ever uncovered. Its implications are as far-reaching and awe-inspiring as can be imagined. Even as it promises answers to some of our oldest questions, it poses still others even more fundamental. We will continue to listen closely to what it has to say as we continue the search for answers and for knowledge that is as old as humanity itself, but essential to our people's future. Thank you.
Mr. President.
You know, I just don't know who that might be, but I love what he's done with his hair. I love that. Love that man. It's President Triangulation. That's Bill Clinton. That's Contact.
That is Contact, where they actually used clips of Bill Clinton talking about scientific discovery at a news conference. And they fit that very well into the script of the movie.
And it was that was the earliest days of the McConaissance were
that's right. That's right.
Of Matthew McConaughey.
As hippy dippy spirituality.
And Jodie Foster, who pretended she was attracted to men,
she was attracted to Matthew McConaughey, huh?
She played a really good role in that. Because she was that kind of fanatically intense, true believer type person in a way that was.
Yep. And I thought pursuit of truth.
Yeah. And the villain, I won't even go into who the villain is or why, but I thought it treated faith pretty honorably.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew McConaughey's whole point was you had an experience that you can't explain or prove, but it's real.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
now you know how people of faith feel.
And it's real to you. Yep.
And you swear you went through it and it's changed your life and you will go to your grave believing it. And you have no evidence that you can present in a laboratory to demonstrate the accuracy of what you said, which they cheated a little bit. This was Carl Sagan, who I miss every day, super describer of all things science, his book. And it was a pretty fair book.
Billions and billions of words in this book. Oh, wait, not that many.
Not that many. But a darn fine movie and a darn fine book.
All right. Number five.
This is not necessary, Mr. President. We have a diplomatic solution.
Mr. Vice President, Mr. Secretary, the missiles are flying. Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
Oh, yeah. This guy's been president more times than a Kennedy family has. This is President Martin Sheen in The Dead Zone.
Yes. Everybody's favorite president.
Yeah. Who was President Crazy Pants? It was.
Yeah, he's not everybody's favorite president in this movie. No. He's really.
Oh, this was
the missiles are away. Let's bomb the world.
This was the possible outcome, the possible presidency of Greg Stilson, I think, who reminded everybody a lot of Tom DeLay.
Because
in the novel, this was a Stephen King novel, and the our protagonist was Christopher Walken. So hey, how cool is that?
This is the Dead Zone. Yeah,
this is the Dead Zone. And this was his a populist candidate for whatever he was running for, Senate, catches populist fire and ends up in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And ends up, you know, starting World War III. And Christopher Walken has these visions. And the book is a lot clearer about his background. He was, I believe, a bug killer. He was an exterminator, I think. In Texas, and Tom DeLay was an exterminator in Texas, and he was a really awful person, and he's assassinated it raises very interesting questions. It was almost like the Minority Report before the Minority Report.
Mm-hmm.
If you know someone is going to definitely grow up to become a monster, what do you do?
Well, we did a video about that once, or an audio.
Yes, we did.
Baby Hitler, would you pull the trigger?
Well, and there's, I remember this exchange in the book. I don't know if it was in the movie, but it was about America. You know, there are certainly other uncivilized countries that solve its problems through political assassination, but not in this country. And the person who's on the other side of the conversation says, really?
Really? Yeah.
All the lists of all the political leaders who have been killed off and how that's reshaped American politics in one direction or another.
Well, and the idea that we personally don't assassinate people is absurd.
Yeah.
Because we did assassinate. We assassinated Osama bin Laden. We assassinated Saddam Hussein. We assassinated Allende in Chile.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Henry Kissinger is a war criminal.
Muammar Gaddafi didn't leave voluntarily.
No.
But the internal politics, I mean, you can take this up with President Huey Long.
Yeah.
You know, who was coming along pretty strong until he was murdered.
Yep.
So,
yep.
There's.
Well, not to mention all the African American people who've been assassinated. And.
Well, and this was a sub theme of Philip K. Dick's last book, which was Radio Free Albemuth. So I'm seeing how I'm tying this into science fiction university. It had to do with political assassinations. And the president in the book was a thinly veiled version of Richard Nixon.
I see.
And in the book, the thinly veiled version of Richard Nixon has, in 1962, was a political failure, as Nixon was, and was told half jokingly that if he ever wanted to be president, he'd simply have to kill off everyone else who could possibly beat him. And over the next 8 years, he killed off everybody else who could pop.
Mm-hmm,
everybody. Mm-hmm. And you go down the list, and he's like, oh, my God, all the civil rights leaders were killed.
Bobby Kennedy
was killed. George Lincoln Rockwell, which I didn't realize until I read the book, you know, the head of the American Nazi Party, was killed.
Wow.
You had this sort of wave of just wiping out everyone in a leadership position. And the only one left was Richard Nixon. So it was fiction, but... Philip Dick likes to do that. We're going to talk in future episodes about A Man in the High Castle, which only has one episode.
So far.
That entire story hinges on Anton Cermak not getting killed but during the assassination attempt on FDR.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
FDR being killed and how that would have changed the world. So it's a very deep and constant theme in alternate history and science fiction. And well done in this particular story.
Number six.
What I do now, I do for the sake of the people of the world. But there is one man here on earth who will never kneel before you.
Who is this imbecile? Where is he?
I wish I knew. Oh, God.
Zod.
Oh, kneel before Zod. That's President, I don't know his name, E.G. Marshall.
It's E.G. Marshall.
Superman 2, the Supermaning with Superman versus Zod.
Right.
It really should have stopped after the first one. It got worse and worse. And then there was the fight for freedom, whatever it was. It just got bad.
All right. See if you recognize this voice. Number seven.
Think of the things that we could do. Think how strong we would be. Earth and Mars together.
Oh, Jesus. I really should, because that's recent. And damn it. It's on the tip of my tongue. I'm never going to guess it, but it's on the tip.
It's Jack Nicholson in Mars Attacks.
Okay,
Mars Attacks.
He played like three different roles in that movie, too.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a remake, wasn't it? Or not a remake. It was a tip of the hat to another Martian invasion movie where those saucers were – I mean the way the saucers were made. I think we saw it recently actually where the little arm – it was Earth under attack or Earth – I don't know. All the titles are the same. But they're running around trying to get away from the ships. The ships have these little – is it lower down? These little dishes that blow things up. And I seem to recall that the ships in this movie – are a direct tip of the hat to the Ray Harryhausen stop action. Spaceships in some crappy science fiction movie. Anyway, that was a fun movie, a very fun movie.
And finally, number eight.
It's a two-party system. You have to vote for one of us.
He's right. This is a two-party system.
Well, I believe I'll vote for a third-party candidate.
Go ahead. Throw your vote away.
Oh, please. Come on. This is the one that that Ted Cruz used as part of his attempt to get a job on The Simpsons. This is Kang and Kodos.
This is Kang and Kodos on The Simpsons. That's right.
Bill Clinton and Bob Dole. They kidnapped Clinton and Dole and replaced them with Kang and Kodos. Spinning, spinning, spinning into the future. One of my favorites.
And he does, and Ted Cruz does spin, spin, spin. So
towards freedom.
All right. You had a post this week.
I did.
About Halt and Catch Fire.
I did.
And I thought it was inspired.
Well, thank you.
Because you compare two TV shows in a way that I just, my eyebrows went up and went, oh my gosh, he's right. They're the same show.
Well, and it's
explain the two shows and then explain the similarities.
Yeah. Well, if you're looking for the post, it's called Halt, Catch Dragons.
And that tells you which show it is. It's Game of Thrones and Halt and Catch Fire.
Catch Fire, or it could have been
the same show.
It could have been called Mother of Logons. So
yeah, it could, I like that one too. Mother of Logons, because she is the blonde in Halt and Catch Fire.
Really,
is the mother of Logons. She is absolutely.
And it's not a ripoff because you know, but it's they take pieces of the game because Halt and Catch Fire was a crappy show in its first iteration. And AMC did a very brave thing. It simply it hard rebooted it. It said, okay, we got it wrong. Nobody cares about guys dick waving over hardware that nobody cares about. Mm-hmm. What we need, and we're going to change the story entirely. This is going to be a story about two women, and the men will be the sidekicks, more or less. And it's going to be about a software company at the edge of social media and gaming, and not about a hardware company that's trying to make a cheap computer that nobody cares about. And they really figured out that sort of the gem was their character Cameron, the blonde coder, the woman, female coder, was the person who the show should have been about. And they made it about her.
Well, and her coworker.
And her coworker. And that's the thing. I started noticing that it's not a ripoff, but they took really significant elements of relationships from Game of Thrones. You have the blonde queen, who is making her way through the wilderness all by herself. She doesn't, you know that she's the heir to the throne, the true heir to the throne. But because her unique, she has a unique gift that makes her special. Nonetheless, she's having a really hard time getting to the promised land. She promises her followers freedom. That's the promise she makes to everyone who follows her. But she's finding that actually governing people and running things is a whole lot harder than conquering things. She has a loyal female confidant who's also her subordinate, but also her confidant. She has an older battle-scarred man who is her right hand. He lives inside the friend zone. I don't think he wants to live in the friend zone, but that's where he lives. And he's got a checkered past. He's been done things that he's not proud of. He's been kicked out of her life, more or less, but he really wants to come back and help her. And he knows how combat works. He knows how the world works and can be of great value to her there. She has a young suitor. Both the blondes have a young suitor who are both poor, but are both very skilled and canny and talented in ways that she respects. And this is where I went, wait a minute. Both of these women command armies of virginal young men.
Absolutely.
And all men, because everybody who works for Mutiny, the software company, is a guy who can't get a fucking date, who can't get laid. And Daenerys Targaryen, Dany Targaryen, commands the Unsullied, the army of eunuchs, of male eunuchs. They both have to deal with an envoy from that they have no reason to trust at all. But they sort of kind of feel they should. Maybe in this one case, there's a reason to sort of take them at their word this one time. And there's also a very acquisitive patriarch floating in the background who's focused on his family of fortune and his legacy and his inheritance. And finally, in both cases, there is an existential threat to our characters, which they are completely unaware of or only barely aware of. They're fighting among each other and bitching about intrigue and politics and assassination and stuff. Meanwhile, just over the horizon, there's the White Walkers.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big existential threat that the audience knows about.
And the theme of the White Walkers in Halt and Catch Fire is it's Mario and Luigi who are coming across the horizon.
They're coming to blow away the gaming world.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know it and I know it, and they're sort of peripherally aware of it. But they're not really, they haven't yet grasped how completely this is going to change their world. And once I started sort of walking through the similarities, it occurred to me, oh my goodness. And I started looking for anybody else who'd written up anything like this, and nobody had. So I thought, well, must be my job.
It's your turn. It's your turn. All right. Thank you, Drift Glass.
My pleasure, Blue Gas.
For everything. Thank you, everybody. Is there anything else we...
Shall we do a special Science Fiction University internet crossover?
Yes, your internet kitty joke. We, you know, at some point we're going to put all our internet kitty jokes together in like, but it's not, usually with openings and closings, we have five or six to choose from. And this one that you wrote really belongs in Science Fiction University. So go ahead and read it.
The internet kitties don't understand why Barack Obama is scolding Majel Barrett. Okay. And for future historians, this was the week when Barack Obama scolded Major Garrett for being an asshole, basically, for being a Fox News clone asshole, former Fox News employee who asked him a shitty question. There was a legitimate question in there. But
But the way he phrased it was just assholery.
He's trolling.
On parade.
He's just a fucking troll. But his name is so close to Majel Barrett that it seems.
And everyone knows who Majel Barrett is, right?
Yeah.
Nurse Chapel on Chapel? Star Trek, the original series,
she
right?
She was the original number one in the pilot.
She was Mrs. Jean Roddenberry, so Roddenberry. She got lots of work from.
She's the voice of the computer, the mother of Counselor Troy. She always worked. Always
well, worked. And she was wonderful as Nurse Chapel. She's a very gifted actress as Nurse Chapel, I thought. But so this was. This fit into Science Fiction University.
There was no other week when this would work. So it worked this week. And so I shoehorned it in.
All right.
All right, baby.
Thank you, Drift Glass. Love you.
Happy birthday. Happy.
Thank you, Drift Glass. Love you.
Love you. Bye.
Bye.